the Light, KLYT Albuquerque Santa Fe. Rebroadcast on KNKT Cannon Air Force Base, K201CC Las Cruces, K228DQ Portales, and worldwide at KLYT.FM. From the KLYT broadcast studio, this is ABQ Connect. Your input on today's topic is important to us. Join in the conversation by calling 505-338-5790 or text 505-585-LIVE, ABQ Connect.
Welcome into ABQ Connect. This is Jim Williams with you. Steve Ryman, our usual gracious host here on ABQ Connect, is off today. Actually, he's not off, but he's doing creative things. I'm joined in studio by Dr. Stephen Collins, Dr. Gary Byers, and Larissa Lusco. Larissa's probably not going to talk unless I force her to, but I always tell her that, and then she ends up saying a few things. Hey, we are talking today about archaeology and the Bible. We're talking about the dig at Tal el-Hammam, the dig at Shiloh. We're talking about academic papers and how this Christian biblical archaeology is been criticized. And there's just a lot that goes into this. I want to remind our listeners about all of the apologetics that our own two doctors here are so much a part of in some of the most, you know, critical discoveries of all time. Let me tell you about our guest. Dr. Collins is the Director of Archaeology and Biblical History PhD program at Veritas International University School of Archaeology. He is the Chief Archaeologist at Tal el-Hammam Excavation Project in Jordan, the site of the historic Sodom in the Jordan Valley. He also serves as Acting Research Professor for Trinity Southwest University. Dr. Byers is the Dean of the College of Archaeology and Biblical History for Trinity Southwest University, and he's the Assistant Director at Tal el-Hammam and the Shiloh Excavation in Israel. We're going to start with the International Symposium on Archaeology and the Bible, version number 8. That's a lot.
That's a lot.
That's great. It's presented by the School of Archaeology at Veritas International University. It'll be held at the Sheraton Albuquerque Uptown September 20th through the 23rd of this year. September 13th is the registration deadline. So, Gary, tell me about the symposium. Why is important people go to it?
It's a really exciting event where we do bring in Dr. C. Over the years, he's been in contact with everybody who's anybody in the field of archaeology and biblical history stuff.
Dr. Stephen Collins, the guy sitting next to you, Dr. C.
And my colleague and boss, and he's been doing this for years. And we took a long hiatus. And when I moved to town, I never made the first five of the symposiums. And when COVID hit, I said, we got to do some stuff. So I talked him into it. And every year I have to re-talk him into it. But we're doing it. And we've got colleagues from all over the country, some from Israel, but most of them from the U.S., but from Canada. They come from all over the country and different parts of the world. And they are experts in their field when it comes to archaeology and biblical history. They may or may not be people of faith.
And that's what I really wanted to direct to Stephen Collins. You are the only guy I know that puts 15 to 20 years in a project, and then you turn over all this research and all of the findings to a group of not necessarily Christians that come up with an amazing paper. We're going to talk about that in a few minutes, that was put out in September of 2021 in the Scientific Reports. A journal that a lot of scientists read. We're going to talk about the critics, and we're going to talk about all of that. But in this symposium, you have archaeologists, world-renowned archaeologists, not necessarily Christians.
That's right. And some of them I have diametrically opposed ideas with. In fact, even the best Christians among them, we have disagreements. Yes. Among ourselves. That's just where science works.
But you enjoy the conversation.
Yeah, because, listen, all these guys contribute to our understanding of the biblical world. Just because they may not hold the same view of the Bible that we hold, they're still studying the same world we're studying. Mm-hmm. And so these are the guys that dig the stuff in the various places and put the science out there. Listen, science is science.
Yes.
It's not, you know, science for Christians and science for atheists and science. It's all the same. It's all the same. Scientific process is the same for everybody.
But the dissenters would say something different.
Well,
in fact, they actually discredit you. Well, I can't help but bring it up. I mean, when you talk about Elizabeth Bick, I've read some of the critics. Is it Barlow?
Yes.
Is another critic. They criticize you for being Christians. It's almost you automatically don't know anything if you're a Christian.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we could say the same thing in the opposite way, right? I could say, you know, because these people think the way they think and they categorically reject things they don't understand, you know, we could say, you know, they're a little light in the loafers in their science. I mean, we could say that. We could throw these kind of pot shots around. But the point is, when they throw criticism at us, it's I guarantee it's always in a place that they know absolutely nothing about what they're saying. They do not know what the facts are. They haven't studied it deep enough. They hadn't gotten. It's like you mentioned this this B word guy. I'm not even going to mention his name at this point. By the way, it's there's an S in there, not an L.
Oh.
And but anyway, he was tops in his field at one time, and you know, as an astrophysicist, as a airburst scientist, as a impact guy, the world has passed him by. He's a little upset about that. The guys who did our airburst research, you know, fire out of the sky from Yahweh Genesis 19 stuff that was actually scientifically researched. And by the way, the paper that they wrote on the destruction of our site mm-hmm. for Nature Scientific Reports is now the most famous accessed scientific paper in the history of the planet.
And that is called...
And he's not real happy about that.
Well, and you invited him to participate.
Well, he was the first guy I went to back in 2007 to ask him to help us do this research. He turned me down, and now these other guys have come up and made themselves kind of famous over it, and he didn't like that. But he hasn't published anything substantive in the field, in his field even, for the last 20 years. And so he's out of the loop. He's getting old. He's out of the loop. And by the way, these guys, the guys on our paper, the Alan West, the Malcolm LeCompte, all these guys are relevant, cutting edge people who are leading the charge in airburst research, and everybody's quoting them. Nobody's quoting the B guy. Everybody's quoting our guys and all over the world in papers. And so we're on the cutting edge of science. What we've done at Tal Hammam was scientific. By the way, how much, Gary? 90% of what we excavate there has Zippo to do with Sodom.
Yep. Very little.
But we have to do the science. We have to recognize that Roman period stuff and the Iron Age stuff and the early Bronze Age stuff and all that stuff. We have to deal with that. We, as scientists, we have to do it all. And by the way, nobody jumps in and criticizes us for that stuff. No. It's only when we talk about Sodom and the destruction of the city and all of that and try to link it to the biblical story that people start, you know, kind of getting a little indigestion over the whole thing and becoming a little bit uncomfortable. And they don't quite know how to deal with us because our point, they dismissed the biblical text a long time ago.
Mm, yes.
We have to understand that. Most of the world, including most of the scientific community, most of the archaeological community, dismissed the biblical text a long time ago as having any credibility for actual history. And so that's where they're coming from. But our point is that, wait a minute. You guys put the cart before the horse. You decided what you wanted to believe about the Bible before you ever did the due diligence of the science that relates to it. We have done it. And we're telling these people that, hey, not only were the cities of the plain, Sodom and Gomorrah and so on, not only are they exactly where the Bible describes them to be, but they were destroyed exactly in a manner as the text of Genesis tells us in chapter 19. It's all exactly that. Now, that's either a colossal coincidence or it's not. And as a scientist, very often I have a very hard time dealing with coincidences. If it fits, if it works, if there are too many elements to be accidental, then it's not. There has to be a substantial cause and effect relationship between what we're finding in the ground and what's happening in the text. And I'm sorry if that makes some people upset, and it does. Mm-hmm. But hey, we're all about the facts.
It's fascinating that people want to explain why the Bible's not right rather than saying, gee, I wonder if the Bible has accurately described this. Because that's how you hear it criticized, Gary.
Yeah.
But in this instance, you've discovered the destruction layer. What does a destruction layer look like that when an airburst, literally an event from God, the destruction of the whole community by fire, what does that look like?
Well, it all depends on when it happens and how big the event is. I mean, there are these airburst events that have happened in more remote antiquity than our site that are literally global events and leave a sort of a black mat of ash and stuff from on every continent. Mm. They're global. They're kind of extinction-level events from the more remote past. Ours happens to be a very targeted event. Isn't that interesting? God said he was going to destroy Sodom and the cities of the plain, and that's what he destroyed. Not anything to the left or the right. I mean, that's basically he destroyed what was on the plain of the Jordan and the southern Jordan Valley, and that's what happened. And all the cities around it just merrily went on into the late Bronze Age. This was destroyed in the time of Abraham in the middle Bronze Age, and that was it. And nobody lived on that piece of real estate that couldn't for the next 600-700 years. Because it just literally wiped out the cities, wiped out the agricultural soil, made it impossible for people to live there in terms of settlements for a long, long time. It's just what the Bible describes.
So for a minute, I want to talk to New Mexicans because they're pretty close to Albuquerque. And what people don't realize is that Trinity Southwest University has many of the artifacts from Tal al-Hammam. Yeah. And homeschoolers, people can tour that museum and come in and check it out. That's a resource that I think is amazing as for young students as well as high school students. Would you agree?
Yeah, well, certainly kids come in and they love that stuff and the things you can have hands-on with.
So you let them touch some of the stuff.
Yeah, the right things. And then get to view the other stuff, and that's really cool. And so kids enjoy it. The weapons and things, and so they like all that stuff, but adults do too, and we have a lot of adult groups or family groups where there'll be some parents and kids and all together. It's not a big overwhelming space, but you can take your time and just find everything you could want to find in the Bible world. It's really amazing.
Let me give you a couple of web addresses. Go to Tal, T-A-L-L-E-L, Hammam, H-A-M-M-A-M.com.
Or simplify it, just
Dig Sodom?
DigSodom.com.
DigSodom.com. Okay. And then also TrinitySouthwest.com. And then if you want to find about the International Symposium on the Bible, on archaeology and the Bible, go to isabq.org. Again, that event is coming up on September 23rd, and you only have till September 13th to register.
And it's not free.
Right.
I want to tell you that. You're going to pay some to get there, but you're paying to help bring in the top archaeologists that have to do with the Bible or the world of the Bible that can possibly be put on a program. I think we have a dozen this year.
And these are not yes people. These are people going to come in and they're going to tell you what they think.
Yeah, and they're going to present pieces of the biblical world that'll knock your socks off. And it's just fun stuff. But this is the kind of thing, it's educational. It's maybe a little awe-inspiring at times. But certainly people are going to enjoy it. We always have a good crowd, and we're hoping for a really, really good crowd this year. It's in a beautiful time of the year, mm-hmm. in late September. Albuquerque weather's great. not so much now. Over 100 today, but it's a fabulous event, and some of these people have been here two or three times.
Yes.
But we have a lot of new faces coming this year. But our goal with the symposium is to invite the top scholars in the world. We always every time we have one of these. You know, it's like, you know, in the NBA or it's the All-Star game. You know, it's the big players, the people that the people are listening to, reading their books, these things. So this is always the A team.
But I'm not going to hesitate to say that most of the time when people put on a symposium, they are bringing in people that agree with their perspectives. And you're not doing that. You're bringing in people that are experts in the field of archaeology, that have published and may or may not have a biblical worldview.
Yeah, no, that's true. But we're not asking them to come in and share their philosophy of life or their worldview. We're asking them to come in and share the archaeology that they've done by way of their own excavations and expertise and how that illuminates the biblical world.
I love
that. And in fact, I'm going to be interviewing one of the top minimalist archaeologists. In other words, he doesn't believe much of the Bible at all. And he's sort of everybody's whipping child when they talk about a liberal archaeologist. When they talk about the liberal left, that's what they talk about, Israel Finkelstein. Well, Israel and I are going to have an interview together, and we're going to talk about his career because, let's face it, he's one of the top archaeologists going. I mean, he's had a fabulous career. He's written some terrific books, The Bible Unearthed, things like that. Not that he believes much that's unearthed supports the Bible, but he has an interesting perspective, and I think sometimes we categorize it. Sometimes we tend to lock people into views that they had years ago, and we don't allow them to kind of move on and change their mind and develop kind of a different perspective, which we all do. But sometimes something we wrote 25 or 30 years ago, it'll come back to haunt us. Well, I did say that, but I've changed my mind since then, or I've kind of tweaked my views. And I think Finkelstein has actually come around to, and I think I'm going to get him to admit that that the Bible is one of the most important documents we have surviving from antiquity, that in order to help the archaeological process. And he's going to admit that that's true. And he knows that I'm probably going to ask that question. So anyway, this will be fun. And I just think it's worth people who are interested in the Bible and archaeology to hear his point of view. And he has, I mean, we stand on his shoulders in a lot of ways archaeologically. I mean, there isn't a lecture that I give that I don't quote him or talk about some of his work. And that's just the way it is. You know, you can't talk about physics without talking about Einstein, and you can't talk about archaeology in the Bible without talking about Finkelstein. So we're going to Stein up, and we're going to, you know, on our end, and that's what we're going to do. And you got to listen to these people. So I may not, you know, Einstein and I may not have ever agreed theologically, even though he was a theist of sorts.
Yeah.
But still, and by the way, Finkelstein makes no bones about it. He's an atheist.
Mm-hmm.
But doesn't mean, you know, atheists can still speak the truth if they're good scientifically. And not only that, you know, there are Christian archaeologists who can still do the truth, too.
Yes.
Christian archaeologists are just as guilty of stretching the truth or bending the truth or denying the facts as the atheist archaeologists.
We all want to bend what the truth is to fit our own world.
Exactly. And I've never done that, of course.
Of course.
So, yeah.
Of course.
Dr. Stephen Collins and Dr. Gary Byers, this is possessive, but I can't help it. Our own world-renowned archaeologist right here in New Mexico. We've got a lot more to talk about with Dr. Steve and Dr. Gary. Stay with us on ABQ Connect. We'll be right back.
On KLYT, this is ABQ Connect. There is still time to join the conversation by calling 505-338-5790 or text 505-585-LIVE. ABQ Connect.
The International Symposium on Archaeology and the Bible, presented by the School of Archaeology at Veritas International University, will be held at the Sheraton Albuquerque Uptown, September 20th through the 23rd. September 13th is the deadline for registration. Go to isabq.org, and you can get your own ticket and sign up to be part of it. We're in studio with archaeologist Dr. Stephen Collins and Dr. Gary Byers, and we've been talking about Tal al-Hammam. And Gary, I'm gonna talk to you in a minute about Shiloh, because you just got back from there.
Did.
And so Tal al-Hammam's not the only dig going on, and there's a lot. But tell me about, after so much time, Dr. Steve, you have decided not necessarily to go back and continue that excavation. How did the dig go this year?
It was an awesome season. It was a double season. We were there. We were had 8 weeks of dig proper, plus a startup and tear down week. We were there a long time. Mm-hmm. And I can't imagine. Gary was home for like a month and turned around and went back to Shiloh for 8 weeks. And it's like, I don't know how he did that. But anyway, he's younger than I am. You know, he's like a few months younger.
He's a spring chicken.
Yeah,
a few months.
But, I decided to quit. Not quit. I mean, it will take 8 to 10 years for us to process through all of the material that we have, all the stuff that we have, the analysis, the radiocarbon, the pottery, the objects, write everything up. We're going to need the help of a lot of people. We have to hire a lot of people, a lot of experts to come in and help us do this, because there's so much to do that we just can't do it all ourselves. We'll do a lot of it, but we can't do everything. And so we are in the publication phase right now, the analysis and publication phase. But there's another angle, and that is, you know, for lack of a better term, I suppose I could call it the propaganda phase. We got to get our message out there.
Yes.
Of course, the propaganda we're going to put out are the facts.
Well, let's start with where it started. September 21st, you released in Nature Scientific Reports an article called A Tunguska, T-U-N-G-U-S-K-A, Size Airburst Destroyed Tal al-Hammam, a Middle Bronze Age city in the Jordan Valley near the Dead Sea. Really not a lot of correlation between Sodom. Yeah, I think it was mentioned.
They mentioned it a few times in the paper.
They did mention that it's possible there's a link. But that's about as far as they went, because the scientists that contributed to the article were not really, they didn't have a, quote, Christian agenda. They were purely concerned with the science.
And so many of these guys on the paper, like Malcolm LeComte, just said, I have no dog in this fight. Mm-hmm. I'm not a Bible guy. I'm an airburst guy. I'm an impact guy. And that's the way they approached it. I purposefully bowed out of being an author on the paper. There were 21 authors on that paper. I was not one of them. But, of course, they relied on our research. They leaned on us to provide our information to them. Of course, they came and did their own analysis. They took their own samples. In fact, they have three or four boxes of soil samples and things that they took from this past season just a few months ago, sitting in Jordan right now, and we're working on USDA Department of Agriculture permit to be able to bring soil in, and so we'll get that shipped as soon as we have our permit back in place. We let it kind of expire, or actually they let it expire because they weren't doing anything either. The USDA wasn't doing anything, so our permit expired. So we got to get it re-upped, and so we can get those samples in here. But
Well, there's people.
I'm not a spring chicken right now, and even though you know, I feel good. I'm energized, you know, but it is not easy to publish stuff. But the other thing that we're doing is what I mentioned: the public announcements, the public material has to get out there to convince the world, to tell the world what we found. Mm-hmm. To convince the world that the Bible is right.
Yes.
And that's our point. And I'm not talking about I'm not talking about faith. I'm not talking about anything. We just need to get people to re-encounter the Bible. And you know, the Bible's got enough heft and the Holy Spirit to boot that we just want to get people pointed back to the Bible. We want them to crack that thing open and let God do his work through his word. Yep. We have to push people back to the word. People have run from the Bible because Christians have sort of dropped the ball and let the world tell the rest of the world, the public, that the Bible can't be trusted. And that was Christianity's fault for letting that ball drop. Christianity has to reclaim reason. You know, we always make a big deal about faith, but if we don't reclaim reason, by the way, the separation of faith and reason is why Christianity lost Western culture. That is the reason. And so, because if you can't come to Christ with your heart and your head, I've always said, your heart will not tarry long where your head cannot follow.
Interesting perspective.
And the best thing that will happen, if your head is not in it, if your intellect is not in your Christianity, you will remain, your faith will be such that you will remain on the margins and never hit a lick for God.
And you're saying that there is no reason for them to be contrary to each other. They go hand in hand.
No, exactly. Exactly. Reason and faith are the same thing. Faith is believing in something that is so factually true, provable, that you're forced to believe it.
Yes.
It's like Jesus' presentation to Thomas. Thomas says, unless I see, put my hands, can touch the hand, the nail where the nails were and where the scars inside, I'm not going to believe. First thing Jesus does, he didn't criticize Thomas for that. Jesus just shows up, offers his hands and his side. Say, here, Thomas.
Go ahead. Touch him.
I'm fine with what you said. And Thomas immediately, once he could connect, I think it's great that people can come head and heart to Jesus. You don't have to leave your head somewhere else. And true intellectuals across history have found that out. I mean, some of the greatest minds in the history of the world, from ancient times to modern times, have through their intellect and through looking at the cosmos, looking at whatever they studied scientifically, have transferred themselves from the world of atheism to theism. I mean, they came to believe in God because the evidence forced them to go there, and this is one of those things. I'm not going to apologize to my atheist colleagues in archaeology that Sodom is the real deal.
Mm-hmm. And they're actually not asking you to apologize.
No, they're not. but they do challenge us about that. They still can't get over the idea that Sodom's not mythical.
Yes.
Well, it's not mythical any more than New York City or Paris is mythical. It's a real place. We excavated it for 16 seasons, and everything there points to the biblical story as being true.
But the conversation about Jesus is the same, really. Was Jesus the Messiah? Or was he just a person? Yeah. I find that whole conversation to be really interesting. But what's most encouraging to me is about this particular topic is that the critics, and you predicted this, would come out. It's really a spiritual thing. They come out and they request peer reviews. What's a peer review?
That's a wonderful thing.
When
you write a scientific paper, they farm it out, and you never know who they are, right? Mm. And there's a reason for that. They farm it out to scholars who have some expertise in this area, and they look at it, they read it, and they give a thumbs up or a thumbs down. Or they say, maybe if they tweak it here, tweak it there, you could accept it. But they tell the editors of whatever journal it is, yeah, this is good. Run it just like it is. Or maybe I was kind of have a question mark right here. Maybe if they could clear that up, I'd pass on it. So sometimes it's one person. Sometimes it's two people or three people on the peer review. That paper, that Nature Scientific Reports paper that came out on the destruction of Tal Hamam is a Sodom. Has gone through like three peer reviews now. And in fact,
the scientific journal has not asked you to retract it.
No, so the goal of some of these scientists was to get it retracted. Well, it went through one peer review to get published. It went through another one over the next following months after it was published because certain criticisms came forth, you know, that were just untrue. But anyway, we documented all of that. That was fine. It went to another. They picked on something else, and on it went. Well, it's gone through three or four peer reviews now. It's still published. They're not going to retract it. And we're working on another follow-up paper.
I love it.
So there's another paper coming, and that one's not going away.
And by the way, I think the dissenters get madder and madder and madder the farther this goes along. Yeah. Am I wrong?
Well, you know, at some point, they're just going to get buried. I will admit this, that the airburst science, you know, this fire out of the sky kind of thing that destroyed Sodom, the science of that is fairly new within the last 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And 30 years ago, it was very marginal. Nobody really talked about it. Now it's very mainstream. It's very front and center. And there are many other sites, archaeological sites around the world in various periods who are pointing to these kinds of cosmic events that have either destroyed or caused severe disruptions in human civilization. And so this is not marginal anymore. It's not on the edge anymore. It is the cutting edge. It has moved from the fringe to the cutting edge. And the guys who wrote our paper are on the cutting edge. I'm talking about, there's a new member. I don't think he's on our paper. He's an archaeologist, famous. He was recent president of the American Institute of Archaeology, the AIA, the most powerful archaeological body on the planet. They are the pace setters for everybody else. And he and I were just on a program together, by the way, last week. And this guy has an airburst in another place, in Syria, in a much earlier period, thousands of years before ours. But my point is that he gets the same kind of pushback that I get.
I love it.
And he has no Christian or biblical connection because they're just – this is the way science works. Mm-hmm. It's unfortunate sometimes. We don't like it sometimes, but it is the way science proceeds, to have the pushback, the kickback, and then you have to deal with it. You have to continue to prove your point until more people are convinced, a greater body are convinced, and then the detractors are fewer and fewer and fewer and fewer until they no longer believe, until the believers in a flat earth are gone. Until those who don't hold the scientific facts are just gone.
I would say this about you, knowing you for as long as I have. Proverbs 3 talks about, let kindness and truth be bound around your neck. You're always kind, even to the detractors.
Well, some people don't think so.
Well, you might not be.
I try to be.
But you may not be feeling
there's always,
that.
If we get to, you know, even for my detractors, at least I can say for me, there's always lunch in the equation. if we could sit down over lunch or coffee or something, I mean, I'm glad to engage. And that's what our symposium is all about.
Yes.
These people are coming in. I mean, some of my biggest detractors have been some of the happiest participants in our symposium. Mm. They like being here. They enjoy the conversation. And, you know, a good plate of enchiladas doesn't hurt either. So, I mean, this is what we do, because we just want people to realize that science is science is science, and the Bible can stand up to the best scientific scrutiny that you'd throw against it.
Well, let's contrast what's happening at Tal HaMoM with another dig. Gary, you've been kind of administrating the dig at Shiloh. Tell us what you're doing there.
So this was season number 5. We, like at Tal HaMoM, we lost 2 years because of COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is our 5th season. Now, the site has been excavated since 1922. Mm. So this is the 101st year since the first excavation. And they found evidence that suggested it was Shiloh. In Israel, it's called, in Hebrew, you pronounce it Shiloh. And people say, well, what's the right way to say it? Well, in America, it's Shiloh. But in Israel, it's Shiloh, and you say it either way you want. What's the name of the river out here, the big one?
Rio Grande?
Grande or Rio Grande? Well, depends on, you know, it doesn't matter. It's all the same river. So We've been there now 5 years. We're excavating in new areas, connecting with the old. And
who excavated there?
Finkelstein.
Yeah, Finkelstein.
Israel Finkelstein excavated there. And he has not chosen to interact with us on the topic. And we'll wait until he's ready. Maybe after the symposium he will, or maybe he'll never after the symposium. We'll see. But Scott, who... I'm the co-director. Scott's the director. Scott Stripling. He's going to be here as well, and so it'll be nice for Scott to interact with all of this and hear all of this.
I will say, as a proud papa, that Scott Stripling was of Veritas International University's School of Archaeology's first PhD graduate.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
Now, will there be opportunities for people that are attending the symposium to talk with these experts?
Oh, absolutely. Now Israel Finkelstein is going to Zoom in. He is not going to be present. Okay. He's got other commitments, but we were very glad to have him just agree to show up. But everybody else is going to be in the house, and our students have been known to take one or two of them out to lunch, to mm-hmm. spend their time with them, to ask their questions. It's just a great opportunity. Of course, you don't have to be one of our students to do that. Invite a scholar to lunch is a great game that they love to play, and they would be very happy to spend time talking about what they know and what they love to people who are interested, for sure.
I get the sense that people that are Bible teachers, pastors, teachers, et cetera, would just get the most out of being at the symposium.
Oh, yeah. We run a little ad, not in every issue of Biblical Archaeology Review, but we run a little ad for Veritas. And we call it the pancake ad. And it shows a big stack of pancakes with syrup, you know, butter and syrup drooling down over the side. And it has a big slice cut out of it so you can see all the layering of the pancakes. But what's cutting out, it was cut, and you can see it in there. There's a trowel. Instead of a fork, there's a trowel cutting through. And the little phrase on the caption on it says, biblical studies without archaeology is like syrup without pancakes.
I love it. Good ad.
It is sweet as honey, the Bible, but without the layering, without the stratigraphy, without the archaeology, you really are at a loss to understand quite a bit of it.
Well, what's the Bible say? There's honey in the rocks. Have you found those rocks?
Yeah, no, none of those rocks.
Shiloh is thought to be the location of the tabernacle.
Yes, the Bible's very clear.
Which was
that.
A tent.
Yes.
So there's probably not a lot of the tent left. What are you finding that indicates it might be?
Well, yeah, the Bible's very clear for some 300 years that the tabernacle was sitting at Shiloh. Mm-hmm. Archaeologically, there have been four different locations proposed for the tabernacle around the 7-acre site that's surrounded by a Canaanite city wall, a big wall. And so nobody's ever really bought in. No art scholars have been able to really settle on, this is the location. And we had neither. Well, we have discovered a structure that's oriented the same way the tabernacle, the Bible says the tabernacle was. It's the size, the dimensions of the tabernacle, and it dates to the early Israelite period, and we wonder if this could not have been what's left of a footprint for the tabernacle. Now, the tabernacle was made, the tabernacle itself was a tent made of animal skins, mm-hmm. but it would have been 100 years old when it got to Shiloh, and would have been another 200-300 years during that time period. So the book of 1 Samuel gives the suggestion that there was maybe some kind of structure with it around it, either right inside the tent or hold kind of on the outside of the edges of holding the tent up. We don't know for sure, but it gives that hint. And two ancient New Testament era Jewish documents actually say so, that there was masonry built in conjunction with the tabernacle there at Shiloh. So we think there's probably something to see. And we call it officially the monumental building. Oh, the walls are about a meter thick, but it's oriented right, and it really looks like it could in fact be the tabernacle. And then just a little sidelight to that. If the doorway seems to be in the east, just like the tabernacle was, and about 30 meters past that, on the edge of the site, there's a dump that Israel Finkelstein, our colleague, found at Shiloh when he excavated there in the 1980s. And he realized that this was full of animal bones and very nice broken pottery. And he decided it must have been a favisa is the word we use. It's a Latin word. It means a pit. But we in archaeology, we tend to use it for a sacred pit, something of a special nature. And it looks like probably what he discovered, and we have continued to excavate the edges that he didn't do, it looks like it was the remains of the sacrifices and offerings given at the tabernacle.
Neat.
Which includes animal bones, the majority from the right side of kosher animals, and the right side was the side given to the priests. Mm. It also includes beautiful pottery, which seemed to be beyond an animal sacrifice offerings given. Grain offerings, whatever it would have been. And now in the last 2 years, we found 4 pieces of gold jewelry in it. Mm. You don't just lose gold. You just don't do that. So it wasn't just dropped there by somebody and forgotten. It would have been placed there on purpose as a gift, an offering to God. And the pottery was always broken because once you gave it to God, nobody else had the right to it. It was God's and God's alone. You know, the Bible uses the word harem for a destruction. It also uses the word for something dedicated to God. And in our modern world, we use the word harem. A harem is a group of women that are owned, possessed by a wealthy man, a royal man. And so, and they're off limits. They're out of circulation. They belong to nobody but him. Well, a harem was what the Bible used for offerings given to God. It belonged to him only. And to prove it, they broke the dish. The priest may have got to eat the grain, but they broke the dish. It was all God's. And as part of that, we're finding little gold jewelry that must have been dedicated to God as well.
Amazing stuff. We're talking with archaeologist Dr. Stephen Collins and Dr. Gary Byers. They're with Trinity Southwest University, and we're talking about the symposium coming up. It's September 23rd, called the International Symposium on Archaeology and the Bible. It's the eighth symposium.
21 to 23, with a reception on the evening of the 20th.
I love it. It's presented by the School of Archaeology at Veritas International University, Sheraton Albuquerque Uptown, right there on the northeast corner of Coronado Center. So pretty close to, you know, in addition to everything, going to the symposium,
yeah,
you'd be able to have walking distance to some nice restaurants and all kinds of things. Really sounds like a good time. Find out more about the symposium at isabq.org. We're going to be back. Should I also say, which I learned this a long time ago, or call Glenda at 505-332-4253.
And that's 33 Bible, 505-33-BIBLE, if you forget.
You got it. We'll be back with one more segment with Dr. Steve and Dr. Gary. Stay with us on ABQ Connect.
On KLYT, this is ABQ Connect. There's still time to join the conversation by calling 505-338-5790. Or text 505-585-LIVE.
Jim Williams here on ABQ Connect with you. Steve Ryman will be back with you on Wednesday. Wednesday, he'll be back. I get to come back on tomorrow talking with a couple guys about New Mexico Men of Honor and some things that Steve Stucker and Dennis Poper, the co-chairs of New Mexico Men of Honor, are doing. So I'll be back with you again tomorrow, but Wednesday, Steve Ryman will be back with you. I'm in studio with Dr. Stephen Collins and Dr. Gary Byers, New Mexico's almost famous archaeologist now.
Almost.
You guys getting pretty famous? Hey, this is an appropriate question, because a lot of times when Christians get in front of a microphone, a lot of people go, oh, those guys sound really cosmic. I hear there was a cosmic summit that is really supporting some of the science behind this airburst.
Yeah, there was a, you know, because of this airburst thing, and it started with the Bible, by the way. Genesis 19 makes it really clear that Sodom and the cities of the plain were destroyed by fire and burning stone from, you know, out of the heavens. And it was a cosmic event. And so, you know, the work that's been done on our site by these 21 scientists and researchers who checked it all out and did the testing and the electron microscope work and all the stuff to verify all of this, you know, when that came out, that sort of put us in a different category. I mean, we've always been in the archaeological world, but now it kind of thrust us over into this impact science world. Yeah. And so there was a thing called the Cosmic Summit that I was asked to come speak to about two or three weeks ago in Asheville, North Carolina. It was a big event. I mean, 500 people paid to be in the room, another 1,500 people paid to be online, and it was, wasn't a cheap event either. I mean, people really had a lot of interest in this thing. And it was not a Christian thing. It has nothing to do with any of that. There were Christians there, and I bumped into people, you know, were. But what was really interesting to me, and I, you know, I don't want to talk about what was spoken. I was very hesitant to go. I'll tell you this, because there were people on the program that I had been aware of for decades who kind of have some marginal ideas about the history of the world, and you know, people like Graham Hancock and others. Now, Graham wound up not coming for whatever reason, but there were a lot of other famous people who are kind of in that world. You might call it alternate archaeology, alternate history, kind of that. But the whole Cosmic Summit thing was how impacts have have influenced, changed, altered the course of human history through the history of the planet. Mm-hmm. Of course, the Younger Dryas event from about, you know, 12,000 years ago and on to our event and other events, the Hopewell culture event that happened about 400 A.D. that helped destroy the Hopewell Native American culture, some of the mound builders in North America a while back. So anything that had to do with cosmic space junk, you know, asteroid fragments, comet fragments coming out of the sky, burning up in the atmosphere, exploding upon the ground, or making craters, or whatever happens. That's what this conference was all about. We have now the most famous of recent note airburst event in science. And so we're right in the front of that. In fact, the guy who put the conference on was one of the authors of the paper that was published by Nature. So anyway, it was interesting. And I tell you this, whenever we – I did not talk on the impact. Mm-hmm. People were expecting me to talk on the impact at Tall Mom. I didn't say a word about the impact except for this. I showed a picture of the front page of the Tunguska airburst event at Tall Mom, Tunguska-style airburst. I showed the paper on the screen. Mm-hmm. And that was it. I said, if you want to read about the airburst, the only airburst known in the history of the world that impacted a major urban civilization, this is it. This is it. But I want to talk about the biblical side of this. I want to tell you how we found Sodom, how we found the site to begin with. I spent all my time talking about the location of Sodom, the credibility of the biblical text, the historicity of the Bible. And because my whole point was to get people back into the text. And let me tell you about the guy who had the conference, who started the conference. He was driving me to the airport. And he's been to Tall Hammam twice with part of the airburst team to take samples, to be a part of that. He's been there twice. He says, I want to tell you something. When I came to Tall Hammam and spent those, he spent a total of 5 weeks there over two seasons. When I came there, and I watched you and Gary and your other team members and how you talked about the Bible and listened to your lectures and just was a part of that whole experience. He said, when I showed up on the site, I was a C&E Christian. He said, at best, I was a CNE Christian and not a very good one at that. Mm-hmm. That's Christmas and Easter. Mm-hmm. He said, that's about as far as my Christianity went. And he said, when I showed up, he said, my eyes were opened. I developed a new appreciation for the Bible. He said, as soon as I got home, I joined a Bible study. I got back in my church. I joined a Bible study, and I've been there ever since. I've been studying God's Word. He said it changed my life. Mm. It changed the trajectory of my life. And I went, wow, you know, that's what it's all about. That's our whole point, is to point people to the credibility of the Bible, even if we can just get them to crack into it long enough for the Holy Spirit to begin to beat on their heart, on the door of their heart. That's it.
Is the Word of God magic?
Magic? No.
Supernatural.
But it's supernatural.
And that really means that by simply reading the Word, the Holy Spirit speaks to your heart.
The Word of God is living and active, sharper than any two-edged sword, and it does the job.
Yeah.
Just got to get people to it.
Got to get people to read it. Amen. We've been talking in the show today about the International Symposium on Archaeology and the Bible. It's presented by the School of Archaeology, Veritas International University, right here in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Hope people will sign up. You go to isabq.org, and registration deadline is September 13th. It fills up, doesn't it?
We will probably fill this venue.
Yeah, this venue, yeah.
You know, wherever venue we wind up at, you know, they're only so big.
Yes.
And so, you know, we'll have, you know, 150 people there or more.
If you need more information, call Glenda at Trinity Southwest University. That is 505-332-4253. Dr. Steve, Dr. Gary, thank you for joining us today on ABQ Connect.
Great, buddy. Thank you.
Thanks, Jim.
ABQ Connect is a production of KLYT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of KLYT.